Good morning. I'm Alisa Z. Thank you so very much for spending your Sunday morning here listening to the Sunday edition. I'll bet you didn't know that very soon, in just a few days, is World Cancer Day. Every single month, we have to talk about the various cancers, some of which I think don't really get discussed enough because they're not the ones that bubble to the top when it comes to research funding and new medications and new treatments and new screenings. In my book, that's why we have to talk about these even more. So to that end, no pressure on you, doctor, but I am joined by Dr. John Wallabick, MD, and specializing in gynecology and oncology at the Barbara Ann Karmanos Cancer Institute. You told me I can call you JJ, so I'm going to take advantage of that. Thank you very much, JJ. Thanks for being here with me.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Even before we went on the air, I learned so much from you about where we are or where we aren't with some of our research and treatments and clinical trials. You said one word that I think everybody needs to hear. You said it's preventable in some cases. Talk to me about that, please.
Yes, thank you. So backing up briefly, so in GYN oncology, which is a subspecialty of OBGYN, we focus on cancers of the female reproductive tract, in addition to cervical cancer, ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, et cetera. What is very a unique challenge, opportunity, and also frustration is that in almost all cases, cervical cancer is preventable. Let's say a century ago in the U.S., and unfortunately in other areas of the world, currently the case, without screening for cervical cancer, it was one of the most common causes of death, especially cancer-related death in women. So with PAP testing, also known as PAP smears, that helped catch the cancer earlier, helped catch the precancer, as in sort of the lead-in to something that could eventually become cancer earlier, but it hasn't totally gone away. So that's one of the biggest challenges we have, is we have tools to prevent. Now, more recently, the HPV vaccine. But unfortunately, not everybody can or is able to get access to both of those ways to prevent or catch early. Right. So in some cases, we're dealing with people showing up at our clinics with more advanced stages, which we're able to treat. But it is kind of devastating. You're seeing a cancer that really shouldn't have been there in the first place or should have been caught earlier.
Are there symptoms of cervical cancer? How are people coming to you at Karmanos or anywhere?
Yeah, great question. You know, the goal with screening tests is to, of course, try to prevent something from arising in the first place, catch something before it would even develop symptoms. In the case where it's already developed or it's more advanced, the earliest one probably would be pain or bleeding with sexual intercourse, pain, pressure, changes like that. At that point, it's probably at a higher version of stage one or even a more advanced stage or more spread, unfortunately.
So if you have not been getting screenings, if you have not had the vaccination and you are experiencing even mild symptoms, don't wait. Just go get yourself checked out. What do you think is the biggest impediment to people coming in to get checked? You mentioned before we went on the air a young woman in her 20s who was diagnosed with cervical cancer. She didn't have access, for whatever reason, she didn't have access to proper gynecological screening and going regularly. How do we work on that piece of this? Because we need to make all of these services available to everybody.
Yeah, great question. You know, and this can vary in different areas of the country, but in younger patients, a number of younger people don't have access to health insurance. Even if they do, it's relatively limited, or maybe due to whatever their personal circumstances are, ability to get time off work, or just they're busy, a variety of things. They may fall behind on their screening or not see a general OBGYN. Yes. You know, there's some women who they only get their health care around the time of pregnancy. and there's some states like I better coverage in Michigan, but I did my residency in OBGYN in Texas, and really a lot of women have pregnancy Medicaid that unfortunately falls off about 6 or so weeks after they deliver their pregnancy. So there isn't this like longer term follow through with preventive care. Right. And so there's a lot of opportunities to fall through the cracks.
Medicaid should or does, though, cover prenatal care, but not necessarily regular screenings. I know you're not specifically here to be a Medicaid expert, but these are the populations that we're missing, right?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, there's a lot of state-to-state differences with this level of coverage. Fortunately, we do have better coverage in Michigan than some other states, but we do see a lot of differences in terms of regular screening, use of PAP testing, HPV vaccination, et cetera, mm-hmm. state to state. Even in a state that has more Medicaid expansion like Michigan, we still unfortunately see patients that haven't had routine PAP screening. I mean, on average, a patient with newly diagnosed cervical cancer, half of those patients that come into our clinic did not have adequate, like, routine standard of care PAP smears and prevention. So we need to, what our specialty does is we try to address that gap when they develop cancer, if they do.
Right.
But ideally, you don't develop it in the first place.
Exactly, which is why screenings are so important. Of course, treatment is critical. And in order to get to a place where treatment is available to the masses, we have to jump through lots of hoops, lots of red tape, and lots of trial and error. How are we doing at Karmanos, for example, with clinical trials? And we'll talk specifically about cervical cancer, since, again, that's your neighborhood. So how are we doing with that?
Yeah, great question. And, the way I think about it, and the way in deference to the past, is kind of standing on the shoulders of giants. Clinical trials, which is essentially it's research where we're looking at how can we build on the current standard of care.
Okay.
We have to do that in a scientific way. It has to be appropriate who we include, who unfortunately some patients have to be excluded depending on certain criteria.
Mm-hmm.
But the current standard of care for patients who have more advanced cervical cancer or recurrent, as in it came back unfortunately after treatment, it's tricky. There have been some developments. And one thing, I think we're going to talk about is how immunotherapy has been something that we've been looking at and we've been seeing promise with, but we have to look at how does potentially adding on immunotherapy to existing treatment, how does that potentially, or not, how does that potentially help patients?
Right. We bandy about the term immunotherapy, but a lot of people aren't real clear on what that is. Are you able to, in lay people's terms, explain what is immunotherapy? We started hearing it a lot during the pandemic, of course, and now we're hearing it more, thankfully, in other areas because we are seeing success.
Yeah, that's a great question. And immunotherapy is a very broad term. The kind of immune therapy, in Karmanos, actually, we have multiple different treatment options for different types of immunotherapy. Our bone marrow transplant team and our other docs could speak better to other types of immune therapy, where literally they're able to create new types of blood cells that can directly attack cancer cells. This is actually immune checkpoint inhibitors. To kind of encapsulate that and hopefully describe it in a way that won't overconfuse your listeners, essentially what it does is it leverages our own immune system's ability to better attack the cancer. So what it does is it helps take the foot off the brake of the immune system's ability to attack the cancer. Cancer likes to try to wave basically a false flag and say, hey, nothing to be seen here. Nothing's wrong here. I'm normal. Don't fight me. But what immunotherapy does is they actually inhibit that checkpoint, meaning that false stopping point,
yes,
to try to take the foot off the brakes of the immune system's ability to fight the cancer. So that's the specific type of immune therapy that really we've been implementing within G1 oncology, including cervical cancer.
That's so interesting. Now, I know there are medications we're hearing about. Keytruda, am I pronouncing it correctly? But I know, it seems I've even seen commercials about it. How far along are we with being able to use other medications rather than traditional chemotherapy and radiation?
Yeah, that's a great question. Keytruda is the brand name for pembrolizumab.
I think I won't remember that.
Right, we can just call it Keytruda. But it is one of the available immune checkpoint inhibitors. It's probably the most well-known one because it has the most FDA approvals for the most different types of cancer. So that's probably why you've seen it on TV, et cetera. So as an example, to speak to clinical trial developments, initially we were looking at the most desperate situations where patients who had a recurrence, as in the cancer came back after treatment, and even came back after another chemo. And we found in certain situations that we could use that immunotherapy, the Keytruda, to help the immune system better attack the cancer.
Okay.
And in some cases, we were seeing progress with that. And what we tend to see with these clinical trials is if in these more desperate situations, if we're starting to see a benefit, that makes us think, okay, well, maybe earlier on, you know, if it was beneficial in this more desperate situation after they had already gotten chemotherapy and it didn't work, well, what if you add it to chemotherapy? And so a few years ago, Keytruda got an FDA approval to be added to chemotherapy for metastatic or recurrent cervical cancer.
Okay.
And then the FDA approval that just happened in the past couple months was, okay, if we move it even earlier to patients who are what we call high risk, locally advanced, which essentially what it is we unfortunately can't cure them with surgery alone. So we have to use radiation therapy.
Okay.
Plus a low dose chemo to help the radiation work better. In the group of those patients that had the highest risk of the cancer recurring or coming back, we found that immunotherapy improved their survival.
Okay.
Through clinical trial work. Right.
So, so important. Before I let you go for the morning, is there anything you would like to add? Would you like to give a 30-second synopsis of notification to people what they should be doing to best take care?
Yeah, thank you. You know, I think, you know, seeing your primary healthcare provider regularly, staying on top of screenings, if there's a recommendation for, especially what we're talking about, HPV vaccination. Cervical cancer is one of the few HPV-related cancers that can be screened for. Most cannot. So really the best hope for prevention is vaccination.
Okay.
And that can be done ideally in earlier individuals, basically in as early as 9 years old.
Yep.
But really, you know, listen to symptoms. If something's not quite right, you know, contact your doctor or other healthcare provider. Specific to Kermanis, you know, we really do have a great team. It's not just physicians, it's nurses, it's other individuals. A great team, really dedicated, focused on taking the best possible care of cancer patients. And we're really on the cutting edge with clinical trials where we're looking at, you know, what is the next standard that's going to be available potentially. And also just, you know, we're there for answers. If people have questions, if they need a second opinion or just, you know, just want to see what kind of answers or what kind of options we could give, we're definitely happy to help out anyone who comes to us.
JJ, thank you so much for coming here this morning, for the work you do, for all the work at Kermanis. You're saving lives every day, and I, for one, am grateful.
Thank you.
And thank you all for spending your Sunday morning here with us. Once again, I'm Elisa Z. You're listening to the Sunday Edition.